Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. As usual, we are so excited that you've joined us this week. And I thought this was going to be a really interesting topic. Marty kind of offhand referred to something last week when we were talking about cats that are stressed out at the clinic. And I said something and she said, no, we don't do that. We use fear-free techniques. And I said, hey, there's a topic that we need to talk about, because fear-free handling, particularly in vet clinics, somewhat in pet grooming, has become something of, I won't say a fad, but maybe a trend, right?
A trend.
And so I wanted to talk about what that is, what it means for the vets, what it means for the pets. So what do you think?
I think it's a great topic, and I think it's one that we really need to delve into. Essentially, it was made popular by Sophia Yin, who was a practitioner, a practicing veterinarian in California, who has since passed away. And so there's been a transition of it. But essentially, she started teaching techniques for veterinary staff and veterinarians to handle pets that came to the office so that they would have an easier time. The pets would have an easier time accepting the care. Mm-hmm. The people that owned them would have an easier time seeing what was happening, and the veterinarians and veterinary staff were safer. So I think those are all really important things to consider.
Yeah.
Those are all real things. Cats like to bite and scratch veterinarians. Dogs get a little panicked sometimes. More dogs are easy to manage at the vet clinic than cats, just as a general rule. Mm-hmm. Dogs, you know, we have a large population of dogs that come in the front door. They're bounding in the door. They're golden retrievers. They're Labradors. They're like, feed me a cookie. I'm great. I love being here. This is fun. But then we have a population of dogs that are a little bit nervous. And then we have a population of dogs and cats that just totally cannot handle it. Stress levels well, and things can very rapidly spiral out of control, especially with a cat. Yes, we can have dogs that do that as well, but I'm thankful cats, as pet cats, only come in the 10 to 12 pound size, because if they came in the Rottweiler size, I don't know who would see felines at their practice. Yes, there are cats that big. They're called bobcats. They're called lynx. They're not domesticated.
They're special veterinarians for those cats.
For sure. So it's important to veterinarians that we have our staff safe, that we're safe, mm-hmm. that the clients are safe, because mm-hmm. a lot of times clients want to help intervene and inadvertently become injured in the process. And so I think it's really important that we look at injury for our staff. We look at the psychological effects of our staff, because they don't want to force pets to do anything. And we look at the psychology of the pet. And that's where it really becomes important, is that every time that the pet has a bad experience at a veterinary clinic, it can remind them the next time that they come in that it's unfavorable. Now, a lot
triggering,
of us
like that laddering exactly. up of emotion, right?
Exactly. And I mean, I've been in practice 44 years. I think fear-free and low-stress handling are important techniques, but this isn't new. And that's part of the frustration that I have with this, is we've always done things this way. It didn't have a name back then.
Yes.
But we've always put peanut butter on cookies, and we've always put cheese out, and we've always gotten out the chicken baby food for the cats and the puppies. Mm-hmm. So to me, a lot of this isn't as new or revolutionary as it would lead you to believe. And there's actually a program that, after Sophia Yin passed away, Marty Becker, the other yeah. Marty in veterinary medicine,
yes.
has popularized and monetized. And let's be really honest about it. He has monetized it. Mm-hmm. He's the other Marty. He's the boy Marty. I'm the girl Marty. There's also a Dr. Marty pet food, and that's not me either. But anyway, those are important things for you to know, is that it's always been the way that veterinarians have intuitively, people who are in the veterinary team, veterinarians included, in the veterinary team have just intuitively said, gosh, if we can make this easier for them, this is great. You know, you can freeze a little bit of cream cheese and have it in a cup for them to lick out, or the owner can bring in their favorite treats like chicken or cheese or, you know, whatever it happens to be. I use marshmallow cream and I use ginger snaps. We use a lot of ginger snaps, because I used to have people that would say, oh, please don't feed my dog a treat because they might get carsick on the way home. With the ginger, of course, and the ginger snap
right.
sort of negates that whole thing. My daughter used to bake liver brownies for the dogs so that they would have these fabulous, yummy, really smelly treats. So when she was in junior high, and she's 40 now, so it's been a minute, she used to bake liver brownies well before there was fear-free, before there was low stress, before all this stuff happened. So a lot of veterinarians, I'm not the only one, certainly by any stretch of the imagination, that has always just intuitively said, let's make this easy. But now there are additional techniques that they are training veterinarians to do through the fear-free program, which costs money for each practice and each person in the practice that participates.
Right.
Right. And then after Sophia Yin passed away, then Cattle Dog Publishing took over a lot of her materials. And they've got low stress handling. There's a book on cooperative care. So there's a number of different sort of techniques. What I don't like about fear-free and low stress is that those sentences lead off with a negative term.
Yes.
And I just personally, that sort of rubs me the wrong way. And it's not that I think the philosophy behind it is bad. I think the terminology is problematic for me because I don't want anybody to say, well, what do you mean it's fear-free? Was there something they were supposed to be afraid of?
It sets up the expectation that the veterinarian is a scary place, and that shouldn't be the expectation.
Right. And that's my concern, is that it leads with a negative. So I would like it to be something that's more positive and just something that everybody can sort of intuitively follow. Now, we always start off, as most veterinarians do, with the positive part of, let's give you a cookie, let's give you the chicken baby food, the peanut butter, the whatever. And then we're going to start handling you as we need to, because it does take a certain amount of restraint to do blood sampling, to do vaccinations, to do physical exams, to listen to the heart, to look in the ears, to do any kind of procedures. And if we have dogs that are really comfortable with that, great. I mean, that's awesome. But we don't always have that opportunity, and it's even less often in cats. So sort of the biggest progression that I've seen is the tendency for veterinarians to now use a lot of pharmaceuticals before the visit and at the visit to help those pets be more calm. Now, I just went to a behavior training class that was a 5-day immersion class, and I've done it 2 other times. So I feel like I'm pretty well versed in behavior. It's called Behavior at the Beach, and it was done by Karen Overall. And I feel like I'm pretty well versed in behavior because I've always appreciated it and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like this is something that was really new to me, but they are now really expanding the use of pharmaceuticals, maybe gabapentin, trazodone, alprazolam, cilio. There's a number of pharmaceutical agents that are short-acting and can be used in these episodes prior to the veterinary visit, typically 8 hours before and 1 to 2 hours before, for cats and for dogs, so that when they come in, they're already on a pharmaceutical agent that can help settle them. We have to still use pharmaceutical agents because a lot of the supplements that people want to use, such as CBD, such as some of these other products, they don't have any science behind them. We don't have any consistency one batch to the next. So you can buy one batch of CBD oil and it can be a completely different components in it the next time. And I've seen some unfortunate side effects, especially if they're combined with other things, that it makes it unpredictable and difficult for the patient. So we have to be really careful that we're using well-known pharmaceutical agents at appropriate doses and that the owners are able to administer them. And the cilio comes as a gel. It gets put on the gums inside the mouth, and it gets absorbed directly through the tissue and goes straight to the brain. It doesn't get swallowed, go to the stomach, and then go into the circulation. It literally goes up to the pathways in the brain. It's like amazing.
And the cilio is the one that is more of a, for dogs with more of an auditory complaint. Am I remembering that correctly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the labeling indication, but there are other indications for it as well. So it can be used in these settings where we have a dog that comes in and you need something that the owner can administer really quickly, gives you some control, and then you may go on to something that's more. And it may go as far as being injectable. It may go as far as sedation or anesthesia if it's something that's really serious. If the dog comes in with a significant laceration and you need to do something, then you really kind of have to proceed with, we're going to have to do something to manage this pet so that we can safely and the pet can safely be treated, diagnosed, handled, all this stuff. So a lot of pharmaceuticals are being used now where until probably 10 years ago, it wasn't being done much at all. It was just being done with, we're going to try to get you to cooperate. And if we can't, we're going to put a muzzle on you and we're going to hold you. And it still has to happen that way to a certain extent, even in the best of circumstances. If a pet comes in serious distress, we don't have time to muzzle condition the dog. We don't have time to send you out the door and hang out in the parking lot for an hour until the drugs kick in. We just don't have that opportunity because the pet may not have that kind of a timeline that we can work with.
Yeah.
So the, I think it's important.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important. And I think there's things. So I'm always an advocate for pet owners having power, having responsibility in their relationship with their pet, with their veterinarian. And so tips for things that owners can do to help their pets and their veterinarians.
And there's a lot you can do as an owner. Happy visits to the vet are a real thing. So when your dog is young or if your cat starts to show signs of distress, you can very quickly say, okay, let's set up a visit first thing in the morning, last thing in the afternoon when it's quieter at the vet clinic. We give the meds if we need to. We give chicken baby food because chicken baby food goes down. It overcomes a lot of dogs that are unwilling to eat other things. Like a ginger snap, they have to commit to it. They have to crunch on it. Chicken baby food, they can take a little lap and they're like, oh, this is pretty good. I think I'm going to eat this. Or you bring along your favorite treat. So you start coming in at the beginning of the day, the end of the night, when your veterinary clinic knows that you are interested in doing this and they have time in their schedule to spend a few minutes with you. You come in, you have a few treats, you get on the scale, you get on the table, you get off the table, you leave. Nobody restrains you, nobody touches you, nobody does anything to you. So you can start to acclimate to what that environment looks like. You can do the same thing with nail trims. You can do the same thing with condition training to put on a muzzle. Is you hold the treat on the opposite end of the muzzle and the dog learns if they put their nose into the muzzle, they get a treat, they get a better treat, they get a better, oh my gosh, this is really amazing. And they do make muzzles now that will fit the French Bulldogs, the Boston Terriers, the Pugs that have, they sort of look like a bit muzzle that they can fit on and then they buckle. So there's a lot of different techniques that we have. We have those for cats. You know, so if we have to do those things, we have to because of safety. But a lot of times we can work around that if we can get the pet to just be more comfortable in the setting. And we've worked with them. And like I have two lift tables. They come in, they get on the table. We put the table up an inch, they get back off and they go back home. Like you have to do these in little tiny steps. And then the more comfortable they get, the bigger the steps can be as you go forward. But you can teach your pet a lot of these really important techniques so that if something happens that you have to put a muzzle on, you have to lay them on their side, you have to restrain them for an x-ray or for a laceration or for treatment of any kind, that now your pet is like, okay, I've done this. I know what it is. I'm going to be okay. I trust them. They trust me. We're cool with this. And there's a lot of things you can do. We try to put mats on all of the tables, like a yoga mat or a thick floor mat so that it's comfortable. It's not a cold, hard table.
Not slippery.
It's not slippery. You can put a towel down. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. There's some products called Feel-Away and Adaptil. Those are pheromones, which are, they're going to help with low-level anxiety. You can spray the Feel-Away on a towel before you put the cat in the towel when you're holding them. And holding a cat in a towel is really pretty great because you can really give them a good, nice, secure feel without having to really hold onto them too tightly. And the Feel-Away on the towel helps to calm them. So Feel-Away comes as a spray, as a plug-in in the room. So a lot of veterinarians will have those in the exam rooms where the cats go. You may find a vet clinic that only does cats or only use certain parts of the hospital for cats. So if you have a cat that's really a dog-averse cat, you can then start to find places that are safer. They don't hear dogs barking. They don't smell dogs. It's comfortable. It's warm. You know, you can take towels out of the dryer, put the Feel-Away on them so the towel is warm and it smells good and it's soft and it's nice. And now we can really safely hold the cat. And, you know, those are really important steps that we can take as veterinary professionals to try and make these trips to your veterinary clinic better. For the dogs, they come in, they get on the table, they get on the scale, they hang out. You touch them a few times. We have a doctor that yesterday was working with a client that she was teaching them to touch the dog with just the end of a capped pen so that the dog was starting to desensitize to the feel of that. And there's even techniques like this for children. I've seen on Facebook a pediatrician that does this with a child and he goes boop, 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 and then doop, takes the needle off, boop, right into the kid's thigh and boom, the kid doesn't even know it happened. So with those right techniques, it can really work very well, but it does take a commitment of the veterinary staff to do it, and it takes a commitment of the pet owner. And we're very willing to do it in our practice, as are a lot of veterinarians, but if the owner isn't willing or able to do those techniques, we're not going to make that kind of progress. So it really takes a commitment, especially if you have a pet that we know is going to be high anxiety. And certain dogs are, certain dogs are not. I mean, I walk in the room with a golden retriever. It can't help itself. Its tail is wagging. It's eating cookies. It's putting its feet on the counter. It's coming over and it's nuzzling me and it's all wonderful. But not all pets are like that. So you have the pet that does that. You have the pet that's a little nervous and they're under the chair or they, you know, they're trying to kind of back away from you. And then you have the pet that just totally outwardly cannot help it. And they are so fearful that they are going to bite or scratch, not because they mean to, but because that's really the only way that they feel like they can control the situation.
Hi, this is Dr. Marty Greer. And if you've just welcomed a new puppy into your home, you know that potty training can be one of the biggest challenges. Puppies learn best with consistency, and that's where Brilliant Pad Smart Pad comes in. It's the self-cleaning indoor potty that takes the mess and stress out of house training. With Poop AI technology, Brilliant Pad automatically detects waste and replaces soiled pads, so your puppy always has a clean place to go. No more stepping on wet pads or dealing with odors. Plus, the Brilliant Pad app lets you check in anytime from your phone to see if your pup has used the pad, so you can stay on top of their potty schedule even when you're not home. And because your puppy always has 24/7 access to a clean potty area, it makes the transition to a new home easier and reduces accidents. Ready to make potty training simple? Visit brilliantpad.com/MartyLaura and use coupon code BPBMartyLaura50 to save $50 on your Brilliant Pad Smart today.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
So my favorite thing, the tips for the owners, teach them to be handled. Like when you get your puppy home, but understand you can teach old dogs new tricks. So if you haven't done this already, you can still do this at home. I promise. Teach them to be handled. Teach them that you're going to touch their foot and they're going to get a cookie. And then you're going to touch their other foot and they're going to get a cookie. And if they're on a weight management program, they're going to get a carrot instead of a cookie.
Right.
Right.
Or a little tiny schnibble of cheese, something really tiny.
Right. And I think that it's so important that as owners, we understand that we have a role in making our dogs comfortable in different environments. And I'm a person, because of the work I've done, my dogs are always out in different environments and being examined by different people. So it's not weird to them. But for a lot of pet dogs who never go anywhere, just hang out at home, it can be very disconcerting to have strangers touching them. And so you as the owner can do the things, can practice with your pet, teaching them how to accept being handled and that it's not weird and that they should just accept it and everything is fine. Trust, building trust.
Right. When you trim their nails, you have to teach them to trust that you're not going to hurt them. And, you know, we say as veterinary staff and as owners, a lot of times we'll just say, oh, that doesn't hurt. Every dog reacts the same way. So I have to believe that there's something to it. And I think that there are different kinds of nail clippers. There are different kinds of techniques that you can use to do nails. So those are all really important things that you don't just say to your dog, too bad, so sad, we're going to just do this and have a come to Jesus meeting with them. You can certainly teach them that those are acceptable things for you to do. With the nail grinder, with a different kind of nail clipper. I like the guillotine nail clipper, not the type that comes from the size, because I don't think it squeezes the foot as much. So, you know, you can do these things at home, but it requires time and energy on your part. And if you're not willing to do it, your veterinary clinic cannot overcome everything that is happening. So you really have to be a participant in this whole thing. Now, Kara Overall, who, like I said, taught this class, has a number of dogs herself, as many of us do. And some of her dogs have had some extensive health concerns, and she has taught them to do things like hold their breath so that when they take an x-ray, the dog inhales and holds its breath. She has taught them to let them put IV catheters in, to teach them to put for IV injections, have taught them to do all these kinds of techniques. And all you have to do is think about, okay, what are the things that my pet may need to experience in its lifetime, and get them started off young and early and start with those desensitization methods and teach them to wear a muzzle. Even if you think they will never, ever bite or never, ever need a muzzle, if they get out the front door and hit by a car, they run to the dog park and get a big laceration. If any of those things, you know, serious trauma happens, you're going to find yourself in a situation you did not expect. And if you have allowed your pet to learn the techniques of laying on their side, being restrained carefully, handling their ears, handling their mouth, looking at things, you know, if you can do all those things, it is truly remarkable how much better that pet is going to tolerate care, how much less stress they're going to have, and how much better our outcomes can be, because now we're not giving drugs that shouldn't have to be given to a patient that's injured or sick. We are allowed to just do the techniques that we need to. And I know, as every veterinarian does, you know, we're taught to carefully go in the room, be quiet, don't stare the dog down, don't do some of these things, don't back him into the corner. Heck, everything we do as veterinarians is wrong, right. But we don't have a choice. Right. There is no other way to do some of the techniques that we have to do. Mm-hmm. Even with the best techniques, there are certain times that if you have to have an eye exam on a dog, there's no way around it. You have to be face to face. There's just no other way to look in their eyes other than to look into their eyes. So that's the problem, is that we know as veterinarians that we're doing some of these things that inherently are insulting and frightening to some of our pets. But if you teach them those things, it can be really helpful. Now, remember, dogs are not generalized learners. Dogs are very specific what they learn. And I say this, I have an employee who I think is this way as well. So we have to be, you know, aware that not everybody can generalize what they've learned. And I think it's important that we know that mm-hmm. just because the dog laid on its back on the couch in your living room watching TV and you were rubbing their belly, doesn't mean when they get onto the x-ray table for an OFA hip x-ray that they're going to translate, oh, I laid on my back on the couch and it was fine, to I'm going to lay on an x-ray table in the dark with two strange people wearing lead that I've never seen before, and they're going to expect me to lay still with my legs out behind me. They don't transfer that kind of information. The more of that you can do, the better, but it's not 100% transferable. So we have to understand that pets, you cannot reason with them. They're just as hard to reason with as a two-year-old. You do your best. I tried to explain them what you're doing. You can talk them through it. And I like having owners in the room as much as possible, as long as the pet responds well to that. But not every veterinary clinic does. There are veterinary clinics that are absolutely hands down not going to let you in on certain participation events. And it's gotten more so since COVID because of the things that happened and staff safety.
So,
staff safety with exposure to people and all the stuff that's happened. So you have to be understanding that the veterinary clinic is trying to do the best they can. And what you need to know is the American Veterinary Medical Association, their professional liability insurance trust called Malpractice for Veterinarians, has trained veterinarians to not let owners help with restraint. Horses, cattle, dogs, cats, iguanas, it doesn't matter. Because if your pet is under the control of a veterinarian and you get injured, you can hold the veterinarian liable. Now, that seems counterintuitive to a lot of us, and it probably should be. Because owners want to be there many times, not always, want to be there, want to participate, think that their pet will, quote unquote, he'll never bite me. I can't tell you how many times a day we hear that as veterinarians, not a month, a week, a year, a day. My pet would never bite me. Oh, just give him the chance. You slam their foot in the car door and all bets are off. It's not your fault. And, it's not his fault.
So a couple things. I think people forget that when dogs are panicked, they lash out. I've had it happen with the nicest dogs in the world. Your dog gets a toe stuck in something and you're trying to get the toe unstuck and it hurts, they're going to bite where it hurts. And if you're what they bite, then that's not going to go well. So understanding that is really, really important. And again, I just cannot emphasize enough. And I, in my previous life where I worked with a lot of other people's dogs, the best dogs to work with were the dogs where the people were very actively involved in doing all of the advanced training. When I had to take it from square one, it was much more challenging. And so I just can't even imagine from a veterinary perspective, trying to work with random unknown dog, is it going to come at me or not? I mean, I have had all my friends in the veterinary industry that have been bitten or nearly bitten.
Yeah.
I've been bitten
and we've
just
all,
in grooming, you know.
Yeah, we've all been bitten. Trust me. I know what it feels like. I've been to the emergency room more than once to be put back together. So in spite of how careful you try to be, and in spite of how fantastic your staff is at keeping you safe, because a lot of staff, that's what they think their primary goal in life is, to keep their doctor safe, because if their doctor isn't working, they're not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very dedicated team of people that do this, both on the veterinarian's side and the veterinary assistant and technician side. So never underestimate what they are doing for you, because they are amazing people who have your best interests at heart. It may not seem that way in the heat of the moment, but they really do have your best interests at heart financially, emotionally, for your pet's sake.
Best interest.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's why they get out of bed in the morning. That is why they have taken the I'm going to be a veterinarian's oath is, you know, it's not for the money, man. I'm telling you, it's not for the money. So, you know, please make sure that you are as cooperative with your veterinarian as you expect your pet to be, and as you expect them to be back with you. Because if you're not cooperating, if you're not all on the same page, your pet is the one who suffers. Your pet is the one who gets substandard care, whether it's because of money or whether it's because you didn't understand or you just couldn't make something happen. I mean, I have people all the time that come in and they're like, I'll say, oh, look, your dog has an ear infection. And they go, yeah, I've got meds at home. Well, did you put them in their ear? Well, no. Okay, well, I'm going to say that the meds work a lot better if they're in the pet's ear than if they're sitting on your countertop or in your refrigerator. So please make sure you medicate. And compliance on the human side for taking their own pharmaceuticals. When you get a prescription from a doctor, some of them don't get filled. Some of them, once they're filled, never get taken. Your pet should not be the one that suffers because you're like, oh, yeah, he didn't want to take his pill or he didn't like it when I put his ear meds in. Hello? You need to be the grown-up in this setting.
Right. And I think, Marty, that particular little thing right there is the one I hear all the time. Your dog is matted. Well, he doesn't like it when I brush him. Great. So now I get to be the bad guy? Coolio.
Right.
And so it is incumbent as a pet owner, part of what you agree to when you acquire a pet of any shape, form, or fashion, is that you will do the work to keep the pet healthy, clean. You don't just get to snuggle it. There's work that goes into that.
Right.
And I know you've heard it the same as I have. Too often we hear, he doesn't like it, so I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Not an option. Yeah, really, truly.
Not an option.
And I know that that seems maybe harsh, maybe trite. I'm not sure what the emotion, because different people react differently to that. But the reality is they don't get to pick. They're like a two-year-old child. And if your two-year-old doesn't want to do something, the good news is when they're two, you can usually still pick them up and wrangle them. But some of our dogs are 2 years old, you know, as far as their emotions go, but they're 140 pounds and you're going to lose that battle. So from very early on, if you're going to have a dog that's going to be a big dog that has the potential to have aggressive tendencies, you best get a handle on that right away, right now. Get them into a training class. Get them into a place that you're teaching them how to behave in a social setting. You're going to get paid dividends.
Even if it's a 5-pound poodle, I promise you, your groomer will thank you if your 5-pound poodle isn't trying to eat them while they're trying to shave their teeny tiny little mouse paws.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, groomers, I think, are some of the most magical people on the planet. They, every now and then, will have a little snafu, and the dog will try to bite the clipper, and they get an injury, and they'll feel terrible. And I'm like, I don't know how you guys don't have this happen every day, all day long, because I work with dogs every day, all day long, and it is not easy, especially when they're working by themselves, to get that full level of cooperation. Yeah. So it's not just going to the veterinary clinic for your happy visits. It's going into your groomer as well and letting them teach them to have their nails done and to shave around their little eyes and their little mouths so that they're clean and safe and pretty and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really important. So I don't think we can overemphasize the importance of that level of training that it takes to get your pet to the point that they are comfortable in those settings and that you're working with somebody that clicks with them. I've had some people that they've gone to a groomer and they're like, you know, this dog just doesn't like this particular groomer. I'm like, well, you know, my daughter didn't like a certain babysitter. And it's not that I think anything was wrong with the babysitter or anything wrong with my kid. They just didn't connect. So find somebody else. If they're not connecting with your veterinarian, if you feel like they're not listening to your needs or they're not working out to do some of the things that are important to you, if you have to drive 45 minutes to find a veterinarian that does the things that you need and that will do cooperative care and training and work with you and do happy visits and all those things, find somebody that does, because they're out there and they're not just the fear-free veterinarians. You may find that information on their website. There's feline-friendly practices, there's fear-free, there's all these low-stress cooperative care kinds of aspects, but they don't necessarily have to be a member of those organizations right. to be of the same mind that that is an appropriate way to handle your pets. Now, if you have a dog that's really difficult or a cat that's really difficult, please be nice and relent to the fact that sometimes they need medications to shorten the learning curve. So if it does take a pharmaceutical agent like alprazolam or gabapentin or trazodone or whatever the drug of choice is right. that happens to work best for your pet, and it may take 3 or 4 tries to get the right medication at the mm-hmm. right dose, but if that's what it takes for your veterinarian to work with your pet, and then you shorten the learning curve by which your pet goes from being not happy to be there to being much more comfortable in that setting, and they may never love it, but they should be more comfortable, then understand that that learning curve, if you can shorten it with pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. it's better for you, better for your pet, better for everybody.
Yeah, 100%. Cheaper in the long run, just going to say.
Oh, not just cheaper, but safer.
And for everybody.
Better psychologically for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. All right. Well, Marty, thank you so much as always.
Sure.
We deeply appreciate you, and our furry friends do as well. So
thanks.
Have a great day. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.